And we are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis LeBay, along with Matt Dillahunty, who is actually Iron Man, Russell Glasser, a.k.a. Thor, and special guest, Jeff
Fear Dean, my hammer,
who will smash. We're coming to you live through the super technology of Google Plus Hangout on the 2nd of June, 2012, from undisclosed locations in Austin, Texas, and its environs. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism, the separation of church and state, and located on an invisible flying aircraft carrier. If you want to learn more about the ACA, you can contact their voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. Shield broadcasts this show every Saturday from 10 to 11 Central Time. You can hack into the chat room and interfere with the show by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So sit back, grab a shawarma, and enjoy the broadcast.
All right.
Hey.
So we're back after like forever and 2 days.
Yeah. Like the semi-old-timey crew.
It is. Yeah, if I would just disconnect, it would be the old timey crew.
Back to our origins.
No, everybody, we'd have to get Vic Farrow back, and everybody else would have to go away.
And Mary.
All right.
So for people who are not listening live, we've actually started using Google Hangouts, which you should look for the next time we might be on. And we can all see each other on camera, except for Jeff, who looks like a Gru.
Mysteriously, right. The camera's not working today, even though when we did an early test for this, everything is fine.
Yeah, and your mic's like insanely quiet, especially
what?
As...
it is again?
No, not insanely.
I'm looking at the waveform in Audacity. It's insanely quiet.
Yeah, he gets to say.
Is this better? Any better?
That's a little better.
Hello?
Yep.
Hello?
Anyway,
I'll talk really loud. How's that? That help?
That works. Fine.
You are the Hulk.
Ladies and gentlemen, live internet podcasting.
So anyway, back to what Russell was saying about us using Google Plus Hangout stuff. There's like 25 people who have decided to tune in to see how big of a clusterfuck we can make this.
Tell your friends.
I don't think they'll be disappointed.
The people who are logged in can see us, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Said in the chat room, love the pipe.
And there's a chat room? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the same chat room there always is at Wicked Wire. It's on the nonprofit's webpage.
Oh, yeah, I'm not there. I was looking in
you
Google.
You can still do that.
Okay, so it's been like a gazillion days. How's everybody doing?
Whew, it has. Just fine.
Is anything special going on that people want to announce or talk about?
Yeah, Loki is bringing an army of aliens to invade the Earth.
Sweet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got confused by Dennis's adventure.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dennis, did you just see that like yesterday and are still geeking out about it?
No, I wrote this intro weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, Jeff, just grab him by
still
the
ankles. Still topical.
Should be no problem.
Alrighty.
Is it the highest grossing film of all time yet, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Okay. Yeah. Yay, Joss.
Wow.
So Joss. What you should have done, though, Dennis, was like done a Jaws intro and then said you wrote that back when we did our last episode.
Yeah, there you go.
Although I'm finding that as my list of strangers as Facebook friends grows, I cannot mention anything that I'm interested in without a flood of comments saying that it's stupid. So, you know, I mention Avengers, and it's like, oh, it's nothing like the comics. And then I mention, like, I got Diablo 3 for Ben's birthday, and everybody says, Diablo 3 sucks. And I'm like, thanks for your gift critique.
Where are you doing these mentions, Russell?
On Facebook.
Really? I don't get that.
Maybe your taste sucks.
All right.
Hey, close that door, will you?
So, on to actual stuff related to like ACA and nonprofits. First of all, we've had to make some changes to the Atheist Experience TV show because of changes to the rules of the Public Access Studio. And since I can't talk about it on Atheist Experience, I thought I'd fucking mention it here. For those who don't know, we use the Public Access TV studios to do the Atheist Experience. Now, Public Access TV studios in America, they're like remnants of the early days of the cable industry, where they put together studios in towns so that communities could get together and have free access to equipment to record shows and share information and generally just, you know, make terrible TV. And those stations are dying out and have been for a number of years. The people are arguing that there's really no need for them anymore because of the internet. They may be partially right. I think there's still value in finding the audience locally who's flipping through channels and stumbles across a cable channel versus trying to find a global audience to stumble across something on the right. huge-ass internet. But we do pretty well in both venues. So my thing is, they had specific rules at the Public Access Studio, things you could mention, things you couldn't mention, and we always did our best to stay within those rules. You can't sell products, you can't advertise, you can't mention prices. But you also weren't allowed to do calls to action, which means you couldn't say, hey, come down and join us at such and such, or hey, go to this thing. And they made an exception for TV shows that were sponsored by nonprofit organizations, primarily okay. because as long as those rules were in place, churches, I'm getting there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Churches wouldn't
have been able to say, hey, come down and join us for church. You know, and stuff like that. Well, now they have changed that so that we are bound by the no calls to action thing. We are also prohibited from mentioning sponsors, which is why in the last few episodes you do not hear that the Atheist Experience is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, because they have this narrow black and white image of what a sponsor is, and it's some company that funds your show, and so any mention of them becomes an advertisement. So the most you can do is put like a 30-second little note up at the beginning of the show. So it's kind of, imagine that you're watching, instead of public access television, imagine you're watching public broadcast television, where Nova is brought to you by a grant from blah, 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 blah. And then throughout the episode of Nova, they can't talk about the people who paid for the stuff. That's the model that they're using for public access, which means I can't mention the ACA during the show. I can't send people to the websites during the show. I can't invite people to dinner during the show. I can't really even talk about our events very much, other than to say that you can find information here. So we are being handcuffed a little bit.
Wow.
And I'm about to say, fuck public access television. We are moving the show to our new building, and we will become an internet-only show and hope that we can still get, you know, theistic callers. But since most callers are coming from outside of Austin anyway,
yeah.
You know, if we set up an 800 number, we may actually get more calls. And we'd have caller ID. And we could do 90-minute shows. Or four-hour shows.
Huh.
Okay, maybe not 4-hour shows, but you get the point.
Yeah, the way to help public access is not to apply more restrictions.
Yeah, it's a way to kill it off.
Yeah.
We're on the air.
I think, did you guys hear that?
Of course, we hear everything.
I heard that. Okay.
So anyway, that's
we're on the air. Hey, it's Linnea Glasser.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah.
Sneaking past the camera as if she wasn't already seen.
Oh, no.
So that's what's going on with the TV show. We're also, the ACA does have the building. We've got the floors were finished. We've got some library shelves up there. We're working on getting the office stuff set up. I want to move the audio equipment there and get some replacement audio equipment so that I can still have a little mini studio here of my own. And we'll have to buy some mics and miscellaneous stuff. That's about all that's going on, except for a couple of big and medium announcements. The first one is that tomorrow is the monthly lecture series for the ACA at the History Center, and that is going to be Laughing Through the Apocalypse with Jerry DeWitt, the first graduate of the Clergy Project. Jerry's actually in his car driving to Austin now and should be at our place later this evening, and we're going to get him some dinner, take him to Esther's Follies, I'm going to try to record a conversation here at the house sometime during the weekend. Then tomorrow at the History Center at noon, he's going to do his talk, and then he'll be on the TV show tomorrow as well.
Excellent.
The last news or announcement-y thing is the ACA Bat Cruise, which is going to be September 22nd this year. And it's going to be like a weekend long, here's some stuff to do. So it's going to, we're having Teresa McBain, the first female graduate of the Clergy Project, will be down here to give a talk. We're going to do the Bat Cruise. After the Bat Cruise is over, there's some of us who are probably going to go to, Estridge Follies again, because I love it. And right. Then there will be the Sunday get-togethers and the TV shows and just kind of make a weekend of it.
Sounds like a plan.
Who's got news?
I've got news. First, I've got some Dennis Marcuse news. Also known as David Mabus, you may remember.
Oh, I remember.
He was arrested last year after making a bunch of internet threats, and he sort of dropped off the face of the planet as far as we could tell. He seemed to be popping up here and there on YouTube again recently, but nobody ever heard, like, he was going for a month-long psychiatric evaluation for a while, but then that was a long time ago and we didn't hear anything. Until this week, when the Montreal Gazette reported that Dennis Marcuse, 40, recently received the suspended 18-month sentence after he pleaded guilty to uttering threats toward 8 people, which I'm sure you know is a massive understatement. Yeah. But he was ordered to abstain from participating in a social network, blog, and discussion forum as part of the sentence. So it took a really long time to get the Montreal police to react to this story, but now that he's actually been arrested, I would not be surprised if he started popping up again here and there, but now you've got a specific case to refer to if you want to report that he's violating the terms of his sentence. So just keep that in mind.
Interesting.
All right.
Was everybody here on the business end of his threats?
Yes.
On an individual basis?
I don't recall.
I never got any threats. I was never on his radar.
Okay. Well, he must not have hung out at alt.atheism very much, I guess.
Yeah, I read Ferengula.
He would have gone after you.
Yeah. Ferengula is the only reason I ever heard about him.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot. And I've made the mistake of replying to him one time before I knew how weird he was. So he made a special effort to include my personal email as part of his email blast.
Awesome. That's a level of special.
It certainly is that. Anyone else, or should I just keep plowing along?
Well, I want to make sure that we actually get time for this because Jeff has joined us this week.
Yes.
All right.
And I know the people watching were like, who is this masked black channel with no camera? Jeff, what prompted you?
Would prefer to have my camera working.
Yes, I would too.
But seeing as how I am completely naked. Oh, that's not it. Technical problem.
Yeah. I'm naked from the microphone down.
Uh-huh. Thanks for sharing.
It's that's quite some mic you've got there.
Thank you. So, what prompted you to dig yourself out of the trenches and come back and join nonprofits?
Well, this time, in the last broadcasted episode of the Nonprofits, it was mentioned that there would be a discussion of Sam Harris's new book about free will on the following episode. So as soon as I found out about that, I said, I want in. Because I want in.
Cool.
Right.
You're in.
Okay. You want me to start?
Feel free.
Knock yourself out.
All right. So free will. Some of you out there may have seen or listened to our famous previous episode about free will, where Dennis and I went into it. And
yes, we burned an entire episode.
Yeah, yeah. And that was bad. particularly since it was only after the microphones were off that the discussion went in the direction of, oh, well, in fact, Dennis and I completely agree about what the facts are. Our disagreement is only about terminology. And I don't want to get back into debating with Dennis about this. He and I do that on our own off and on enough already. But Sam Harris has entered the arena now, so I consider him fair game.
Yeah.
I have not read his little book, but I have listened to Sam Harris giving a hour and a half lecture about the contents of his new little book. And I've also read his post on his own website where he responds to criticisms from those people in my camp, the compatibilist camp on the subject of free will, responding to their criticisms. Basically, his response is, well, I haven't talked to Dan Dennett about this yet. So with the understanding that I have not read the actual book, but only heard him on with peripheral comments about that, Sam Harris says there ain't no free will. And I think this is a problem.
Why?
I will talk about specifically his argument, Dennis. And I know, okay, since I've asked you whether you shared this concern, I know that this is not the same as your argument, because Sam Harris's main thing is he would like to see the practice of vengeance ended, please. That is his primary concern.
Sure.
He appears to believe that he can knock the legs out from under the practice of vengeance by denying the existence of free will.
Well, he can knock the rationale out from under it.
I'm not so sure about that.
What rationale are we... all right. So here's how I see things. In the olden days, the model of human behavior was, we are all magical spirit entities inhabiting physical bodies, and therefore we have the ability to be the absolute sole source of our own behavior, and therefore we are absolutely solely responsible for our own behavior. And the reason why this model existed was because the church wanted to justify the kind of crap that they believed their God would do to us when we did bad things by saying, well, we fucking deserve it, right? Completely, unarguably. And, well, of course, that's bullshit, because there's no such thing as these magical little... behavior, thought-generating entities that are free of business. Sam Harris is... Oh, and under that model, though, they recognize the existence of crazy people, and this was a problem in that model, because crazy people... Yeah. What was wrong with them? Did they have no soul? That was one way that they'd respond. Or was there something wrong with their soul? Did they have another bad soul in there that was doing the bad things? So they within the context of this being a supernatural system,
they were possessed.
They had their explanations for. And now more liberal modern thinkers developed this model a little bit further and said, well, okay, but you know, we don't hold people responsible for those things that they do when they're explicitly crazy, right? because we don't know. Right. It might be they're possessed. It might be that their soul is broken. It might be that they don't have one, right? But that's not the kind of person that we take vengeance on, because the whole this whole thing was to justify God's vengeance, right?
Right. Okay.
And that's all, and all of that is bullshit. Well, Sam Harris's response, as far as I can see, is to say, well, in fact, we're all crazy. This is not the words he uses, but right. this is how I see it. We are all crazy. We ain't none of us involved in the decisions that we make or that we appear to make, right? We are ain't right. none of us doing anything except just existing and going following the script that is handed to us from elsewhere.
Yes.
And okay. Then there's the compatibilist view of free will. The compatibilist view of free will is to recognize that there are degrees of freedom, as there are in engineering, right? That even though we recognize that it is true that much of what drives us is outside influences over which we had no control, there is still a package of phenomenon that is involved in the process of coming up with our decisions. And that package of processes is what we refer to as us. And so when we say we have free will, we mean there is a part of the process that happens inside of us, and that's the bit we're talking about. And when that is constrained by conscious effort of other individuals, that's what we mean by lack of freedom. That the advantage, I think, of the compatibilist view is there's still language we can use to tell the difference between a normally functioning person and a person that has severe constraints, right? Like a crazy person. Under Sam Harris's model, I don't see where there is any language left. Of course, new language could be generated to talk about the difference between a normal person
and Dennis Marcuse
that needs an intervention. Yeah, I almost jumped in and started the conversation when he came up. There seems to me there are relevant differences, and by throwing out the distinction between a person who is responsible for their actions and a person who is not, that's the baby is being thrown out with the bathwater. Now, getting back to Sam Harris's fixation on vengeance.
Hang on.
It was significant to me that, yes?
On this subject of the language thing, yeah. First of all, I think there is language. Uh-huh. It just may not be as shorthand, but even a crazy person isn't, we wouldn't say, oh, they weren't acting of their own free will. The crazy person, if we're going to use free will as that label, it doesn't gain us anything in distinguishing crazy people from sane people.
Right.
We have entirely different language to distinguish crazy people from sane people. Dennis Marcuse, crazy as a bat, still exercised his free will if we're going to use that language model. So I don't see where this issue of language is. It doesn't make any difference. If we get rid of the term free will, we still are able to distinguish between these people.
There certainly is other, yeah, it's the loss of the shorthand that I am complaining about. Okay. And because I think that's useful and relevant.
Just not relevant in the crazy person sense. I find that if free will as a term, if it's going to have any use, it specifically needs to relate to impositions on what we would normatively call my free will.
Uh-huh. And so the question is, what are we going to normally call free will? Right? Hello?
Sure. I guess.
My screen changed. Well, that's the discussion. Now, this is why I wanted to get back to Sam Harris's fixation on vengeance. It seems to me that Sam Harris is of the view that the compatibilist take on free will somehow justifies vengeance. He is not satisfied with the compatibilist approach of saying, look, here's this body of phenomenon and behaviors that we refer to as free will. We used to mean magical supernatural stuff when we were talking about free will, and now we're not. Now we're talking about the part of the process that takes place within the individual. That's the person, that's where the will is, and the question is, does that bit of the process get to operate relatively unconstrained? And Sam Harris, either he completely hasn't addressed it, or he somehow thinks that within that is a continued justification for vengeance. Here's the compatibilist take on vengeance, as I understand it. Whether we have free will or not, sometimes even people who have the other view of free will, like Dennis and Sam Harris, recognize that sometimes there needs to be intervention on people who have acted weirdly, right, in ways that are not acceptable, right? I would say that the compatibilist view of vengeance is, it is one of a suite of different kinds of interventions that we have at our disposal, and it's bad because it's not well informed and it's driven by, you know, poor motivations. It's a motivation other than addressing the problem. That's what's wrong with vengeance. What's wrong with vengeance is not that there is a recognition that you can identify the person needing the intervention, which is what Sam Harris's view looks like to me. It's what throwing out the term free will looks like to me, to compatibilists like myself. It looks like we're saying, well, in fact, we just can't tell the difference between a person who needs intervention and one who doesn't.
How we can.
Hang on. See, and not only do I not see any of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
But having read his book and having the book in front of me, I see the opposite.
Really?
Of course.
Well, I don't know, of course.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't have said it. I was saying, of course.
By an hour and a half lecture by him and by his article specifically addressing compatibilism.
Yeah, I said, of course, because I was joking that I wouldn't have said it if I didn't actually see it. So let me get to, I have to dig through the book real quick to find his examples, because he does make distinctions and he does talk a great deal about moral responsibility. He gives, for example, five different examples of human violence. Number one, a four-year-old boy was playing with his father's gun and killed a young woman. The gun had been kept loaded and secured in a dresser drawer. Number two, a 12-year-old boy who had been the victim of continual physical and emotional abuse by his father took the gun and intentionally shot and killed a young woman because she was teasing him. Three, a 25-year-old man who had been the victim of continual abuse as a child intentionally shot and killed his girlfriend because she left him for another man. Four, a 25-year-old man who had been raised by wonderful parents and never abused intentionally shot and killed a young woman he had never met just for the fun of it. And five, a 25-year-old man who had been raised by wonderful parents and never abused intentionally, shot and killed a young woman he had never met just for the fun of it. An MRI of the man's brain revealed a tumor the size of a golf ball in his medial prefrontal cortex. In each case, a young woman died, and in each case, her death was the result of events arising in the brain of another human being. But the degree of moral outrage we feel depends on the background conditions described in each case. We suspect that a 4-year-old child cannot truly kill someone on purpose, and that the intentions of a 12-year-old do not run as deep as those of an adult. In cases 1 and 2, we know that the brain of a killer has not fully matured, and that not all the responsibilities of personhood have yet been conferred. He goes on from this point to talk about the distinction between these and how we can still have moral responsibility and still evaluate the situations and still take, you know, the requisite actions to distinguish between the normative behavior of somebody and whether or not they represent a danger that is, you know, a trend in the future versus if their normative behavior is crazy and evil prone to killing people.
Then here's my question. What is gained by denying the existence of free will?
Truth.
As far as our ability to recognize those five distinctions?
Well, I think you're conflating two things that are relevant, that don't necessarily go together. Sam Harris isn't eliminating free will because he doesn't see its use in this thing here, or he doesn't like its use in thing here. He's eliminating free will because he legitimately doesn't see that we have free will.
Okay.
Can I jump in with something that might be a sidetrack but seems kind of relevant?
Of course.
I'll try not to sidetrack it too far if you don't think it's appropriate, but have you guys read Sam Harris's recent articles on profiling Muslims at airports?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It occurred to me that there's some kind of connection because I hear Jeff saying, and I haven't read this book, but I hear Jeff saying that Sam Harris is trying to take this ultra-rational point of view by denying too much specific human agency in their actions. And yet he's going to this weird opposite extreme when he says, and I pulled up a quote here a minute ago, he says, we should profile Muslims or anyone who looks like he or she could conceivably be Muslim, and we should be honest about it. And again, I wouldn't put someone who looks like me entirely outside the bullseye, but there are people who do not stand a chance of being jihadists, and TSA screeners can know this at a glance. I'm not going to say that I wouldn't expect that Dennis, as our resident free will denier, would agree with him, but it seems like Sam Harris has gone to a sort of ad absurdum place with his notion that there's something sort of completely mechanistic about, like the Muslims are bound sooner or later to commit terrorist acts because it's in their nature rather than their will.
I think he's playing the statistics or something.
He's playing with statistics badly, though, because he brought on this security expert, Bruce Schneier, who
ripped him a new one.
Right, and he still, even when confronted with expert opinion by someone who deals with this business, insists that we've got to just treat Muslims as assumed terrorists.
Well, it's hard for intelligent people to change their minds.
Yeah.
Once they have worked themselves into a particular position. I wasn't going to bring that up because I was concerned about a perception of an ad hominem attack on Sam Harris. But since you raised it, I think there is a non-ad hominem that can be raised, and it's this. Sam Harris, book about the end of faith where he says things which are easily interpreted as a call for the serious consideration of the use of atomic weapons on Muslims. Sam Harris, the guy who speaks at an atheist convention and says he does not like the word atheist. And there are several other instances of the profiling thing. There are several other instances of these things where Sam Harris has taken an extreme position. Now, clearly, even if we were all in agreement that Sam Harris is full of shit on all of those other issues, that doesn't mean he's wrong on this one, right?
Right.
But I do think it should be taken on board as a recognition that Sam Harris is a guy with a track record of saying extreme things for some reason, which we probably can't be sure of what it is. Okay. That's all I have to say about that. And now we have gotten completely sidetracked.
Yeah, because I don't see what any of that has to do with this subject here. When I, having read Sam's book and looked at this, not by the way, I don't disagree with Sam on almost everything he says about free will in his book. Mm-hmm. It is scientifically correct, as far as I can tell. It is reasonable based on the specific definitions and scope of what we're talking about. I still see some value in drawing the distinction that compatibilists do, and I don't have any objection at all to calling that free will, as long as, you know, we're able to, everybody understands that, you know, what we're calling free will isn't what most people would call free will. I think there's a good argument to be made that compatibilists are essentially redefining the term to suit what we want.
Either the theists or the compatibilists have to change the term they're using. Otherwise, it's just confusion.
All right. Well, there. This is the point I want to get back to, and thank you, Matt, for raising it. It is, in fact, not a question of one side or the other having to change their definition, Dennis. These are all, we are talking about a number of already existing, philosophically accepted, you know, seriously accepted different definitions of that thing. It is not true that that only the old-timey theistic definition is a valid one. The compatibilist definition is not new. It goes back like a century. So it is just not true that they're absolutely that confusion raised on this issue is some new thing that, you know, people like Dan Dennett are causing. And even if it was, this sort of thing has happened before. Magnetism used to be viewed as a supernatural phenomenon, and now we know what it really is. The word never changed. The understanding of what was meant by that word is what changed.
Yes, but everyone agrees now that magnetism is a natural phenomenon.
And they didn't.
There isn't a large group of people who think that it's magic.
And they didn't all originally, right? So,
I think the point.
Well, I don't see how that's an
issue. So I guess they went through a period of confusion.
I suppose, but that was the other point I wanted to make. That even if it were true that one definition reigns right now, and there will have to be a change, and that change will cause some confusion. That has happened before, and it has been for everyone's benefit, because making up a new term for the same phenomenon that means something else is just as confusing.
Okay. Here's what I think Sam is objecting to. You have a group of people who are using the term free will, for shorthand purposes, we're talking about libertarian free will, the kind that we all reject. And then you have another group of people that are saying, no, we don't have libertarian free will. We have this, and let's call this is now free will. That'd be the compatibilist thing. And I'm not going to get to what this is just yet. So I know we're confusing people who haven't, you know, spent as much time looking at all this stuff as perhaps we have. But what Harris is saying, or seems to be saying, or seems to be confused about when he talks about, you know, Dennett's position in compatibilism, et cetera, is, okay, we both agree. You know, we had this big, long debate about free will before, and at the end of it, we go out and talk.
We agree.
We absolutely agree on what we do have, what the physical aspects of reality, how our brains work, how causality works. We were in complete agreement there. We just didn't agree on whether or not to call it free will. And what Harris is saying is the same thing that I think Dennis was saying, is I agree with you on what we have and don't have. Why on earth would you call that free will?
All right. And here is a reason that I think is significant. Because when you tell people they don't have free will, they fucking freak out.
I think if
you tell people that what you have is what the compatibilist view of free will is, people are okay with that.
Dennis is
okay with that. Dennis is okay having what the compatibilists say he has.
Yeah, but most people won't be.
I think that
No, I'm not talking about the term now. I'm talking about the description.
most people will not be comfortable with that.
I think that's a horrible reason to keep any term. It's like saying if we tell people they don't have a soul, they won't know how to cope with it. It's like telling people if they don't have a God, they won't know how to be moral. I think that's a horrible argument for hanging on to a term.
Except, again, this is not a new term. These are long-standing, differing definitions of what free will is.
Okay,
I don't see the relevance of that.
There's a poetic metaphorical definition. There's a poetic metaphorical definition for soul.
But so are you saying that the prevailing definition of free will has to be supernatural?
No.
Is supernatural?
Wow, no.
So I'm not sure what you're saying. You're comparing it to soul. It clearly, the prevailing definition of soul is supernatural, and I'm right there with you saying we shouldn't have a scientific definition of soul.
You've just switched scope. You just switched scope and context. You asked, does that mean that free will necessarily is supernatural? The predominant has to be versus the predominant is. In both cases, soul and free will, the predominant view is that.
Is it?
Yeah, the predominant view of free will is this magical libertarian
magical
free
stuff.
Will.
That's and what the theists use.
And the predominant view of magnetism was supernatural. So why is it
are you trying to rescue the phrase free will from the theists?
What do you want to call it instead?
Well, first
will
of all, with magnetism,
will
there's
is a perfectly adequate word.
With magnetism, there's a demonstrable phenomenon that doesn't exist for free will or soul.
I think for free will, there are demonstrable phenomenons that are the things we point to and say, these are expressions of free will. I mean, when you went through Sam Harris's five examples, there was clearly a scale there of, you know, how much that person was involved in determining that outcome.
Was there?
So I'm not sure what you're saying.
No, he was talking about our perception.
We draw
our
distinctions between those.
Those five different examples are things that evoke different opinions about how much the person.
Yeah, they evoke different.
That's the phenomenon.
Okay, that's not real. That's our perceptions of the events. That's what Sam Harris is saying.
But we need terms to talk about things that we perceive as well.
Yeah, I think we have some.
Yeah, it's subjective.
I'm not. And by the way, I don't disagree
Dennis,
with
when you say that's. I'm sorry, hang on, I said that. Yeah. Dennis, when you say that's subjective, are you disagreeing with Sam Harris when he gives those five different examples and says that we should react to those people differently? If we should not react to those people differently, then
does he say we should react to those things differently? Yeah, that's fine. That's his opinion. That's his subjective opinion.
Agree.
We should react to those things differently.
You don't agree.
I agree with him there. Yeah, absolutely.
You do.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking. Because
I agree with his subjective opinion.
Okay.
Because the reality is every one of those situations is a brain acting according to its structure.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
And it doesn't matter how the specifics of the whole situation are different in those different cases.
It absolutely matters.
At all.
It absolutely matters.
It matters to our opinion.
Dennis says it matters to our opinion, Matt. And I think Sam Harris is saying it something more like I would agree with is that it matters as to the type of intervention, if any, that is appropriate in those cases.
Sure.
That is the compatibilist view.
That's
the compatibilist view says, look, we're reacting. We're trying to find the most effective, proper reactions to those things. And so we need to tease apart Dennis. This is why we shouldn't be arguing about Dennis's view, because Dennis is clearly not in agreement with Sam Harris.
I think he is.
Yes, I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Where did I say I was?
I don't know
because
what.
Because you think it's just a matter of opinion. I'm
yes.
certain.
Of course it is.
Sam Harris thinks that these are actual, tangible, real, objective situations.
Yes.
Which require tangibly different, real, objective responses. Are we not sure of this? Wow, you both look puzzled.
I don't know what you're saying.
I'm here's the thing. Sam listed five cases and said we have different views of what happened here. Are yeah. we consider
yes,
these
that's
we hang
go on.
God, let me finish.
Sorry.
There's five different cases. We have different views about how we should treat those. The reason we have different views about how we treat those is because we recognize differences between them. And all of this yeah. we are still talking about. Everybody can have a subjective opinion about the fact that these things are, they are, nobody's denying that they're objectively different, and right. nobody's denying that it is objectively true that we have different views about how those should be treated.
So is that what you mean, Dennis? You recognize that those things are objectively different?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
How could he not?
The situation is different. Yes.
It's objectively okay. true that the person with the brain tumor is different and the causal factors are different from the person without a brain tumor. It's objectively true
right.
that the 5-year-old that accidentally shot someone is different.
Actually different and not just subjectively different.
Like actually Dennis? Different.
Right.
Okay.
He's describing different events. Yes.
I'll have to go back and watch the video and see which of us went off the rails there. But I apologize if I misinterpreted you. I'm trying to get to the question of whether we were talking about whether there is some objective phenomenon going on that's worthy of a term. Because I was asking if we're not going to call that body of behaviors that we point to and say that's what we mean when we're talking about free will, then what are we going to call it? And we went on the sidetrack about, are there even any objective behaviors we can point to and say that's what we mean when we say free will?
And the answer that Sam gives is no. When you look at those five cases, wherein lies free will? Where exactly is free will in those five cases? It doesn't exist.
The portion of the decision-making, this is the objective, the compatibilist response. The free will is that what goes on in the portion of the entire situation that takes place inside the individual and is not unduly constrained or impacted or driven by outside influences. That's what compatibilists mean when they talk about free will. So with a little kid, right, if the little kid with a gun, that's an accident. That wasn't the kid's will. It wasn't intentional. So we're not, that's not free will.
Okay.
Compatibilist view. But we keep getting back to this. I would be happy with a different different term for that stuff, except we don't seem to be able to get past to the question of whether there is even anything going on that we mean.
See, my reason for being a compatibilist and agreeing with what I understand Dennett's position to be is that I see a value in drawing a distinction between when, and I'm going to avoid will and free will, but when I, as an intelligent, active agent, am being constrained or directed by some other active, intelligent agent, that is a violation of this being, or it's an inhibition or a control of my ability to act. And I'm fine with saying that this is an imposition on my free will, even though I don't for a second think that I actually have free will in any workable, usable, big sense. I am only using it as a shorthand word to describe that scenario where I am constrained or guided by another agent in a way that conflicts with my intent, I guess. It's hard to parse it out without all the language.
One of Sam Harris's big issues is that the source of our decisions is utterly mysterious to us.
Yes.
It appears to come out of nowhere.
Okay.
At least that's our perception of it.
He brings up the experiment showing that, you know, in certain laboratory situations you can detect which thing the subject is going to do moments before they report that they know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And to me, that is utterly irrelevant because it is still the subject that they're talking about. They're taking measurements of signals in the subject's brain. They're not consciously aware. Sam Harris seems to think that you can't say that a person decided a thing unless they consciously decided it, which I think is kind of silly.
Okay, this is the point.
So that's why he says we're all crazy people.
This is the distinction. This conscious awareness, by almost any workable definition of will, one would need to be consciously aware of a decision. Otherwise, something is happening, and the consciousness is merely recognizing that this something is happening. There's no there. There's no me that is influencing the decision. The compatibilists, which I agree with, are saying it doesn't matter because this is all part of the same agent's brain. It's all in there. And what Harris is saying is, I agree with you. It's all in there. I don't see why you would call it will, because from the point of view of the consciousness, you're not deciding a damn thing. You are, even when you think you've decided something, you haven't decided anything, and you have no way of determining why you decided anything and no way of demonstrating that you decided anything. You're just a consciousness making observations. And he finishes the book essentially by saying that the illusion of free will is itself an illusion. But that may be kind of meta and crappy.
Everything you just said there, describing his position, is predicated on a definition of the word you, which defines you as solely that bit of all the complex processes of your brain that is the consciousness part. And I don't think I don't think that's necessarily valid. It's certainly worth a discussion whether you is only the conscious bit or all of it.
I understand what you're saying, and I would have agreed with you, except that it's not defining you as only the conscious bit. It's defining will as only the conscious bit.
It's making a demand that will be something under conscious control.
Yes. If your will is not under your conscious control, I mean, doesn't that prove
it
right there?
How can it be free?
But getting back to something you said earlier, I think what these experiments have shown is that we were mistaken about the role of what we call consciousness, right? The conscious awareness. That in fact, what we have been referring to for centuries as your consciousness may indeed only be something that rests on top and reports what it finds about what is going on in your brain.
Okay.
And that's fine. I mean, then we need a new understanding about what that bit of your brain does. How did we get to the point where we are now denying responsibility for decisions that come out of our brains just because we happen to not be consciously aware?
We're not. Nobody has done it. I mean, Harris hasn't. He even goes into great detail on this. Nobody's denying responsibility. I'm still responsible for everything.
That's what free will is about.
No, it's not. It's not just about. It's not just about responsibility. What sense does it make to say that that it was an act of free will that I had no conscious knowledge of? How is that free will if something happened that I have no conscious awareness of?
That sentence gets confused by our apparent misunderstanding of the role of consciousness. If consciousness is in fact just a process that rests on top and reports what it discovers, then it was wrong to ever think that that is where our decisions came from. Our decisions in fact come from deeper.
I agree.
That's still us.
I agree. Our decisions come from deeper, and I agree it's still us. But what sense does it make to say that something that one is not consciously deciding is an exercise of free will?
Again, yes.
If my arm,
that sentence doesn't work is because consciousness is apparently not what we thought.
Under what you're saying, if my arm starts flopping about like this due to a neurological condition, that's an exercise of free will.
I'm not saying that everything. Brains are complicated things.
Now we're splitting hairs further and further.
Okay.
I'm sorry if the brain is more complicated than you would like to imagine, Dennis.
Then you need to identify.
There are a number of different things going on in us, of which, teasing this apart, it may be complicated.
So what is, until you draw a distinction, I don't see how you can justify saying what free will is. I mean, first of all, you parse it away. I'm in agreement with compatibles for the most part. You parse it away from consciousness to say that it's all part of the same being. Okay, great. Then wherein is free will? What is the distinction between my arm flopping around that I'm not consciously controlling, or and my arm punching you in the face that I may or may not be consciously aware of?
You're a split brain patient, and you have two different brains in your head, and one of those lobes thinks one thing and one of them thinks the other thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird and bizarre, and we don't have language for talking about whether you as an individual decided that. Maybe individual is the wrong word for that situation.
In a split brain patient, I think
don't
that
know, and I'm not, and I'm not saying that I that that I've and compatibilists are not saying we know precisely what all is going on inside the brain. I think the tentative answer to your question about the flopping arm would be we don't hold people who are crazy responsible for their actions. So I don't think we would hold someone who had whose arms were flopping about at random responsible for the random movements.
And I,
but
I
the people,
we,
but the crazy,
we do hold
now, crazy
hang
person.
On. Now, hang on.
We do
the
hold people.
Random movements of which you had no conscious control, right?
We
like picking up objects and throwing them at specific targets, right? There's clearly some objective there, and it's not just muscle spasms. Then I think it's not nearly as obvious that there's no will.
We do hold crazy people responsible for their actions. We just don't hold them. We just don't consider them the same. We still lock them up. If a crazy person kills somebody, we still can. They're still responsible for those actions. That's the point. Is that first of all, free will doesn't make any free will doesn't make any difference to whether or not we can recognize individuals who are problematic in society and of whom it is in our best interest to prevent them from doing more harm, et cetera. That is all possible without free will. We don't need this MacGuffin of free will to drive that sort of decision. But we do, in fact, hold people responsible. We just hold them responsible to different degrees. We hold kids responsible to different degrees than the parents. And it all comes down to how much they are capable of consciously recognizing and consciously influencing the actions. And that's why consciousness is so intrinsically tied to the idea of free will in every sense. It's not right. it's not the complete total package within the compatibilist view of what free will is, but what Sam's saying, and the part that I agree with, is that when you talk about the compatibilist view of free will, what exactly are you talking about? Because if you divorce it from the consciousness and just say that it's the whole collection, you can't say it's the whole collection of things that happen in my brain, because there are things in my brain that compatibilists would say aren't free will. You know, a neurological condition that causes my arm to twitch is clearly not free will. And so we have to parse that out. Well, we don't know where this distinction is, but yet there's an assert, yes, yet there's an assertion that there's still free will somewhere. And that makes free will into a nondescript kind of magical term that is being used to essentially encapsulate our ability to distinguish between things that we really haven't got a handle on how to distinguish between.
Okay, well, nothing the compatibilists say makes free will into a magical term, because everything compatibilists say about free will is limited to actual physical phenomenon. So, no.
Sure.
It may be that there is a vague, a body of behaviors and limitations and or lack of limitations and constraints that is not as black and white as some folks might like. That is what compatibilists mean when we talk about this person is operating without his will being constrained. And we're going to have to leave it there because it's 11:45. And I know, Matt, you wanted to end the show there. And in fact, I have to leave.
Well, let me say this. First of all, wow.
You can say whatever you like.
Hello?
Have to leave the show.
Okay.
I have an appointment.
Oh, read the book.
Yeah.
So
he couldn't finish his last book because of the crap he was saying.
It's short. It's short, and it's yeah. I think it's important if you're going to criticize his actual position to read the book. It's
he
a little
could
bit
not make his actual position clear to me in an hour and a half lecture and an article specifically addressing my viewpoint. Then I'm not sure what the book is going to do. But if I find a copy, I'll read it.
I'd give it to you, but it's on my phone.
In my opinion, he is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And we didn't really get into that as much as I would have liked.
Well, maybe we can hash it out again another time.
There are different, completely valid definitions of what we could mean by free will. One of them is based on stuff that's actually observed within the bounds of physics and reality. It may not be as absolute and black and white as some folks might like, but the fact that we can say this guy seems crazy and that guy does not seem crazy, to me, says there's a distinction we're making, even if the distinction is gray, right, or fuzzy. There's a distinction we are making that is valid that we can talk about. And now I got to go.
Yeah. And the question is whether or not we have any justification for calling that free will. But since welcome back to the nonprofits. After some time off, we dig right back into free will because we know what you guys really want.
I don't think we covered the really important question, which is cavemen or astronauts? I say cavemen.
Wait, if you put a caveman in a spacesuit, what is he?
They don't have weapons.
Caveman or astronaut? Yeah, that was way up there on the importance list. All right, so... Okay, so we've learned some things about Google+.
Yeah. It seemed to work pretty well, except that it showed me walking out for a while.
There were people who
I'm sure next time we'll try to get more into news.
Yeah, there were people who could evidently only see me during the show, and somebody else has commented that I'm bloody awful at general information. I don't know what that means. I'll ask, though.
You're not brief? I don't know.
I'll ask what that means. Yeah. I'm curious. But anyway, in new stuff as well, and I'll keep this short because we've got to go. I've already announced that some of the stuff that's going on. Obviously, in addition to this show, we still do the Atheist Experience, and there's Godless Bitches. By the way, the Atheist Alliance America Convention in Denver, the Godless Bitches will be up there to do a live podcast, and I'll be up there sitting in on a panel with Seth and Aaron about YouTube activism, which is just completely fucking baffling to me. It's like I've been doing this for years and people organizing events don't really know who I am or what I do, because I really don't. I'm not a YouTube guy. It's the fact that somebody, you know, I'm no more of a YouTube guy. I'm a little bit more of a YouTube guy than, let's say, you know, Colbert or somebody where clips are constantly getting posted. But anyway, I'll sit on the panel and talk about what I do or don't know.
We do get a lot of traffic based on people coming in from things that people cut out of on YouTube. So, I mean, we don't go out primarily to YouTube, but we get a lot of views and feedback from YouTube. So, I mean, that's something you could talk about.
True. Other things that are happening and coming up. I'm currently in competition with R and Ra to raise money for Camp Quest Texas. They picked two Texans seemingly at random to try to raise money for Camp Quest with a goal of $2,500 each. I am currently, last I checked, I was like at $180 or something like that, and still winning, but I need to be winning and winning more. So Jerry DeWitt is going to be here in a few hours, and I'm going to record a sit-down discussion with Jerry. I have no idea. It could be 30 minutes. It could be 3.5-4 hours. We're just going to sit down in the room with microphone and chat about his time as a believer, my time as a believer, the process of getting out, and any other thing that crosses our mind. And if I manage to hit the $2,500 mark before the weekend's over, then I'll post it first thing Monday morning or Sunday night.
Cool.
If not, then I'll post it as soon as I actually do hit the goal, assuming I hit the goal before Aaron does. And if Aaron wins, I will forever have a recording of me and Jerry DeWitt that only certain people get to hear.
Oh, and also on behalf of Ben, no matter who wins, thank you guys for supporting Camp Quest.
Yay. I love it. Well, cool. Is Ben going again this year?
He is. Yeah, I've already enrolled him.
Then we need.
He loved it last year.
Then we need to book him to come on and talk about his experience again, because that was one of my favorite moments.
I'll see if he's got some free time in his schedule.
Okay.
His very busy schedule.
If we'll hope that's the case. And we'll see about, I don't know, maybe we can give him an honorarium or something. I don't know. I'll think of something.
Makes sense for a bouncy ball.
Dennis, close out this this free will episode, and hopefully.
All right.
So next week, let's do this again and have news and stuff and get back to nonprofits.
You bet.
All right.
We'll try to gather some, yeah. Well, that was our show. We'll be back next week to combat another planetary threat. Until then, I'm Dennis Lube with Matt Dillahunty.
Goodbye.
Russell Glasser.
See you later.
And our special guest was Jeff D. Nonprofits assemble.